Welcome to another episode of Naval History and Heritage Command's Anchored in History, Stories of America's Navy. I'm your host, Cliff Davis, and today with me in the studio is Gordon Calhoun, historian and curator for the National Museum of the U.S. Navy, and Thomas Frezza, public affairs and outreach specialist here at NHHC. Thanks for coming in for this episode of Mutts and Men.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having me.
As we get started, I need to state that the views by our guest are that of their own, not those of Naval History Heritage Command, the U.S. Navy, or the U.S. government, and do not imply an endorsement of them or their entity they represent. So, Gordon, how did you get into studying the topic of animals throughout naval history?
We did an exhibit at Hampton Roads Naval Museum in Norfolk, and we did about animals in the Navy. And one of the animals that we first started was Bob, the chow chow of Admiral George Dewey, who was one of the first chow chow dogs to actually be brought into the United States. And I found that topic absolutely fascinating. You start looking into the topic deeper, you start seeing the number of celebrity animals and also just the regular animal, the animals of the everyday sailor, both working and as pets and mascots. And eventually find out, at first we say, oh, it's ha-ha, it's a fun topic. Start looking at it deeper. There's a very deeper meaning to it, and it actually is a very important part of U.S. Navy history.
And Tom, what piqued your interest in the topic?
Well, my background is a bit interesting because not only do I have history background and outreach background, but I also volunteer raising service dogs and guide dogs for the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs. And I also have pet dogs of my own. So the interest has always kind of been there. And working with the Navy, working with history, I kind of always started noticing a lot of dogs and animals popping up. And it piqued my interest wanting to learn kind of the history behind why they were there. And I do not only outreaches for Naval History and Heritage Command, but I do outreaches on my own for fun at National Park Service sites and museum ships. And I wanted to look for a way to incorporate the dogs that I have and the dogs that I'm raising into a lot of those programs. And it's a story of the military in the past that a lot of people don't know about and find extremely unique. And it always piques their interest when you have a dog there or some animal there. So that's what really kind of piqued my interest in it. And also a lot of the photos working with Gordon that he would be able to pull up of dogs and animals doing ridiculous things on board ship, and the joy on the sailors' faces, usually in the background watching whatever the animals were doing.
Right. So correct me if I'm wrong. Historically, animals on ships were used as sources of food and nourishment. When did it start to change for the Navy?
When refrigeration starts coming about. The reason we're having animals on board ships in age of sail is because there's no other way to get fresh food. We, in the modern era, kind of take refrigerators for granted. Age of sail, the food for sailors is really awful. And so officers with their own money would buy their own food. They would bring in ducks. They would bring in chickens. They would bring in goats. There was a pig and maybe even a cow on a couple occasions. Yeah. Whatever they decided they wanted to bring, and they paid with their own money. And the Secretary of the Navy made sure, yeah, it's with your money, not our departmental funds. You could bring animals on board. And many of these sailors are coming from a farm. They already know how to take care of animal. They have skills in animal husbandry. And so they actually ask for volunteers at the beginning of the cruise. Who knows how to take care of an animal? Great. You're going to be taking care of our animals for this extent of this cruise.
Until we eat them.
Until we eat them.
One of the things I found was Secretary of the Navy, J.K. Paulding, issues General Order 28. The practice of bringing home in the public vessels of the United States various animals such as horses, donkeys, mules, and other quadrupeds formerly authorized by this department have been found by recent experience productive of great inconvenience and liable to abuse, is hereby strictly prohibited. So why did they turn around and start prohibiting animals from coming on board?
That standing order comes from an incident where Commodore Jesse Elliott was the flag officer on board the frigate USS Constitution and one of her last cruises in the Mediterranean. He purchased several dozen Arabian horses, Andalusian horses, donkeys, chickens, whatever he could find. And he was somewhat within his rights to do so. There was a standing order from all departments. If you came across a way to improve American agriculture overseas, you were to grab that animal and bring it home. And in some cases, the sailors and captains went to pretty extreme measures. The cases of ships going to Peru, they kidnapped some of their llamas. Even though the Peruvian authorities said, don't do that, they would write back, sir, we got a llama. And so in the case of the Constitution, they brought on all these horses. Arabian horses are very, very valuable at the time. We had the tribes in the Middle East were not exactly letting them go to Western sources. So when Jesse Ely had the chance to get them, he bought them. He had to take care, he told the sailors, take care of these animals. Well, this particular cruise was problematic on several levels. And the sailors having to take care of these animals was the last straw for them. And so when the ship pulls back into Norfolk, they file charges against Elliot for cruelty and abuse and several other levels of civil wrongdoing. And the Secretary of the Navy has to look into this. They have to convene a court-martial. It's a mess. And so Paulding says, look, this is never happening again. And just issues that general order. But it kind of does happen again. And that's one of the things about animals and rules of the Navy. It fluctuates.
If you look at sailors' food at the time, it's heavily salted, pickled. Really, it's not fresh whatsoever. So by having those animals on board, it added to the nourishment too. So the animals that Gordon was talking about, like the horses and everything, were not being used for nourishment. So there's two different categories at that point. There's nourishment, and then there's just regular old animals.
So fast forward to the latter 1800s, 1893, in fact, where legend has it, two sailors were mourning the loss of their goat, and they were on their way to the taxidermist, and again, as legend has it, they turned around, they went to the football game at the Naval Academy, and they decided to run up and down the field with this goat. And supposedly that is how the goat at the Naval Academy started. You know, is this correct?
That's correct. And along with a little pygmy goat called El Cid, who was the mascot of the armored cruiser New York. There are pictures of El Cid. He's just this cutest little thing standing on the deck among sailors doing morning exercises. And everybody is smiling. And this is sort of that one photograph. If you look up El Cid on the internet, you will see him making everybody smile, and that alone tells you why these animals are on board. But the midshipmen saw the New York was used as a summer cruise ship, and they saw El Cid's like, and the case of those other two midshipmen said, yeah, we need to get one of these, and we need to have one all the time. And the legend of Bill was born.
They won that game that year in 1893,
yeah,
when they had the goat.
Yeah.
So and it's interesting how, looking at our services now, we have 1900, the Navy has the goat, the Army comes up with their animal, and then you've got years later, Chesty Puller, the Marine Corps with their bulldog.
Which, Chesty was not the first. They actually had Jigs, who was another bulldog, way before Chesty, during World War I and into the 1920s. And there's a lot of photos of Jigs out there wearing a Marine Corps campaign cover and all sorts of other stuff. He was a very famous bulldog that the Marines used. And it wasn't until after World War II that you see Chesty, named after famous Marine Corps General Chesty Puller, kind of come into the system.
So kind of going backwards and talking about the Academy and their goat, at the same time, in April 1893, the chief's petty officer rank is created. Does the use of the goat at the Naval Academy also equate to the chief's becoming called the goat locker?
This, I personally do not know, and I would be willing to entertain ideas that people have out there about how this came about. And that is the case with a lot of things with animals and animal names in the Navy. A lot of it comes from is a very grassroots-driven events. There's not an official order or directive we can find from the top allowing this to happen. It was spontaneously, a lot of events within military history were created by the enlisted ranks, rank and file, and they didn't write down an order. They just started doing it, and it worked.
Right. And legends get passed down, yeah, and they get inflated and everything as well. So, yeah, if folks have any ideas out there, we would definitely entertain, yes, the stories, if you will.
So you were mentioning on board the New York, they brought the goat in and increased, I guess, the crew morale. Was this the cause for increased mascots in the late 18 and early 1900s?
You see an explosion of the number of animals per ship. At one point, they said there was 8 to 10
animals per ship in the what we call the Steel Navy time period, 1880s up to about World War One. And I'm not sure the exact reason for why there is so much more now, partially because we have more documentation of the animal. Photography really tells us when these animals are on the ships. Age of sail, they don't really, for some reason, don't mention it in their letters. Only recently I found out the USS Cumberland, the ship that was sunk in the Battle of Hampton Roads, after studying the ship for 15 years, finally found out it had a black cat during the battle. Didn't know that. But when photography comes about, animals are get put front and center of every single ship's company picture. And I'm like, oh, so, and yeah, then we start seeing more and more and more, especially in the 1890s and 1900s. There's even a painting of the USS Kearsarge of one of the artists for Harper's Weekly happens to be on board, and he just sees all these animals on board, and he paints every single one of them.
Yeah, and again, during the Civil War, there were some images that were struck that officers would pose with animals that they had on board, which were most likely their own personal pets, but those are few and far between. During the time of the Spanish-American War, you see photography really explode because it's not all wet plates anymore or tintypes. They're actually using, again, different types of film and everything, so it's much easier and much more popular. The cruiser Olympia had a female photographer come on board at one point, and she took photos of the sailors doing the most mundane things on the ship, but also took photos of Admiral Dewey with Bob on board. But in the background, you can see sailors, not only is Bob there, but there's cats, there's other dogs. At one point, the Olympia, we're talking just about one ship, the Olympia had a pig that was one of their mascots as well. So these ships were like floating menageries. They had tons of different animals out there, cats and dogs probably being the most popular at that point, probably because of ease of taking care of that, and they were pretty standard in size.
They're also very useful for age of ship sail purposes. It's very useful to have cats on board to get rid of rats as demousers, because there were problems of rats gnawing on the sides of wooden hulls of ships, and ships having to slow down because the hulls fouled simply because of the rats. The frigate Essex during the War of 1812, the legend there was when they parked the ship at Washington Island during a combat cruise, that they didn't have any cats, and rats just literally ran off the ship when they beached it onto the island. And the ship was slowing down because of all the hulls caused. And eventually that leads to one of the many factors why Essex is ultimately defeated off the coast of Chile.
Interesting. So back to this Steel Navy you were saying.
Yes.
The amount of interesting animals that I ended up finding, from kangaroos to bears to
monkeys.
These photos actually can be found on our website, where you've got a monkey, you've got a couple cats, a couple dogs in front of ship's crews. Are there any other more interesting animals that you have come across in your studies?
There's the bear mascots that the city of Seattle, and no, it's not technically Seattle, but one of the other cities in what state of Washington, gave one bear mascot to each battleship of the Great White Fleet. They also, and they handed over some of them over to the auxiliary ships. And one of my favorite photographs is of the USS Buffalo, a support ship, with the bear up on the rigging. And there's no, you don't see any sailors on board. This is in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. You think the bear's running the ship. And most of those bears were given over to zoos. That was also, yeah, when Sydney gave them each a kangaroo, the smaller variety of
wallabies.
The wallabies. Yeah, they gave them wallabies. I have heard stories that Brazil gave them a jaguar. I have not been able to see photographs of this. The story there was that when the ships were going through the Straits of Magellan, the jaguar jumped ship and made it to shore. But that I have not been able to confirm. But yeah, I have been able. There was one picture of the battleship Connecticut, the flagship, with 13 animals. And yeah, parrots, cats, how they all kept them under control, I don't know. But they somehow did. And one of the reasons we do see, though, with the Steel Navy time period, one thing that newspaper commentators are noticing is that, yes, these ships are very magnificent technology, but they are noticing, like any other factory on shore with civilian workers, it is a tough life, especially being in the engineering pits, to do everything they have to do. And animals are a way for them to try to get a break from all this. Newspaper reports are taking notice the positive mental effect that animals and pets are having for sailors having to do work these 12-hour watches and then some.
And it's a good reminder of home, too.
Yes.
So they're away for such a long time. Yes, they're visiting other countries during the age of the Steel Navy, yeah. but it's a good way to remind them of home, maybe civilian life, that good break from the monotony and also the dangers of serving on these large and at times dangerous vessels.
And it makes this is one of the great trends in military history right now is to explore the human side of warfare, to explore what the more of the mental and psychological effects that it has on people. And animals show the military history is a very human driven event. The picture we talked about, Bob and his Chow Chow and how cute he was and things like that. But there is a photograph that is really telling. Admiral Dewey was sitting down for a formal portrait. He's in his dress uniform, and Bob comes up and wants attention. He jumps up and puts his front paws on Dewey's lap, and Dewey is looking over like, who's the good boy? Who's the good boy? And the photographer, thank you, got the photograph of the two of them having this moment. Here's the man that everybody thought was going to be the next president of the United States. We see paintings of him being, you know, something, nothing short of a lord among everything. And here he is all of a sudden, very human, very mortal, because he's petting and loving his dog.
And it's one of the, if not the photo of Admiral George Dewey smiling.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's great to hear that. Well, animals are being used as mascots and for enjoyment purposes, in essence, during the periods of the Great White Fleet. There were more than 1 million dogs as messengers and pigeons as messengers to send, you know, back and forth in the lines during World War I. Was this the first real instance in use of animals for a period of war for the Navy?
For the Navy, I would say yes, especially with the pigeons as messengers. Now, during World War I, the Navy did have, again, animal mascots on board ship. If you go into the archives of Puget Sound Naval Museum's photo archives, they actually have a photo of a dog aboard the battleship Nebraska, where the sailors made a uniform for it out of an old Navy jumper, has the name of the ship on the side and everything. But I would say for working animals, pigeons is probably what they use the most.
Yes, the use of carrier pigeons. They actually made a pigeon loft on the back of the USS Langley, the Navy's first aircraft carrier. And they did have, one of them, correct me if I'm wrong, a petty officer rate, I believe, to actually take care of pigeons. It was just specialized in doing nothing but taking care of pigeons. And they were going to do it also on the Saratoga and the Lexington, CV-2 and 3, but then wireless technology does come about, and they say, all right, we don't need them. However, pilots, naval aviators, are carrying a group of pigeons with them. When they go flying, they carry a box of 4 pigeons with them, and when they spot, say, a German U-boat, they can write it down, write the little message, put it in the carrier pigeon's foot, and then off the pigeon goes back to France. It actually was they put a naval academy, initially in the 1890s, they put a naval academy professor, the French language professor, in charge of this program, because he knew, apparently had contacts in France where all the best carrier pigeons were. The go back, he was given this order of, here's a wad of cash, go get us some pigeons. And he actually gets 2 or 3 patents on how to best for a pigeon to carry a message.
With animals being used so highly in World War I, with dogs and carrier pigeons and so on and forth, is this why you see an uptick in animals being used as ships' mascots and squadron logos, like Felix the Cat and the rooster for the Saratoga?
The rooster of the Saratoga, this actually is based on a live bird. It was actually a rooster that is on board the sloop Saratoga during the Battle of Lake Champlain in 1814. And that produced one of these live birds, eventually was going to possibly get eaten. Sure, it was a rooster. Yeah, it was going to get eaten. And he, during the battle, Cage is broken free by one of the British cannonballs. Well, he gets up on the barrel of one of the cannons and starts crawling back at the British like, ha, I'm still alive. I'm still here. And so since then, every ship called Saratoga embraced that rooster as their mascot, both as a live mascot and also as part of the ship's crest. I have seen photographs of CV-60 Saratoga brought on a live bird. And said, yes, that's our, I don't know what his name was. I'm sure they came out with some silly name for him.
Now, for, say, like the Felix the Cat and everything, you have to think of cartoons at the time period. So that's probably why you see a lot of cartoons being embraced as mascots during the interwar periods, but also during World War II. There's also, this is probably a whole other podcast that you can get into, of different cartoon companies as part of wartime service creating emblems and logos and everything as well. So that's a whole other podcast that you can get into. But you do, especially during peacetime with like the Great White Fleet and then just post World War I, you do see kind of an uptick in animal mascots because it's peacetime. Yes, they're still going out and patrolling and everything, but it's monotonous at times. So again, having that image of home or that idea of home, having those animal mascots on board, it became beneficial to the sailors and to the entire crews of having something on the ship.
Right. Do we know how many ships and squadrons have actually used animals?
I do not know, but it's a good number, I'm sure. And that goes back to even just medieval times of using an animal. Usually they had like fantastic animals like dragons and griffins, one have not, as their symbol of courage or courage. And with the case of the Navy, they actually get with the cartoon things, it looks silly, but actually people like that. People actually find more inspiration in a Felix the Cat carrying a bomb than they would do something that looks more like royalty with the Scottish Griffin or something like that. No.
Okay.
Something that's relatable to them.
Yes.
In World War II, there was a creation of a program called Dogs for Defense. Can you guys expand on that?
Yeah. So Dogs for Defense was a program that was only done during World War II. The military didn't have really any working dogs at that point, and they realized very quickly with lessons learned that having a military working dog program would be very beneficial. So they put the call out for citizens to donate their dogs for military service. Now, these dogs were not your, you know, you're not looking at Chihuahuas and Beagles and everything. They're looking for working breeds. So German Shepherds,
Pointers,
yes. Labs, working breeds. And they would have several specific jobs, be it sentry dogs, scout dogs, messenger dogs, even sled dogs as well. And all of the branches utilize these dogs. The Army mostly used them with military police, though sometimes you see them up on the front lines. The Marines use them in combat. The Navy and Coast Guard use them to guard installations, but also do like shore patrol as well. And it was with the understanding that the military would keep these dogs for the duration of the war, but when the war ended, they would detrain your dog and you could get your dog back. And of the 20,000 dogs that went into the service, the number varies, but it's between like 95 to 98% of them were able to be detrained. And they either went back to their original families, and if the families didn't want them because it was such, you know, the war was pretty long, if the families didn't want them, the handlers who had them during wartime service could keep the dogs. And it's with this program that, again, it was only done during World War II, the military realizes that working dogs are great. Maybe we should start our own breeding program and build up the working dogs that we have within the system.
Right. So in 1952, the Air Force starts that program. The Navy quickly follows suit.
Yes.
And I find it interesting how in 1959, the Navy creates the mammal program where they start using bottlenose dolphins and California sea lions for the protections of harbors and, you know, recovery of objects. So it's interesting to me how we've kind of come full circle from nourishment to now utilizing animals for protection, for safety and such.
The animals can do things that technology cannot. That is one of the where you see their utilitarian purposes. There are certain things we have not been able to develop the technology to detect people underwater as well as not nearly as well as, say, a sea lion or a dolphin can. Or in the case of a dog can, as many of us have dogs know, they can sniff out just about anything. And, you know, whether, you know, be food or whatever, they know we have never been able to create any kind of sniffer detection thing the way it's good as what a dog's nose has.
Tom, you mentioned in the intro about therapy dogs. How does the Navy's canine training compare to therapy dogs?
So you're looking at two different types of quote unquote working dogs. With the military working dogs, they're trained for a very specific job, and they're also trained for combat, if you will. Now, say the therapy dogs or even service dogs are, yes, they go through rigorous training. It's all about consistency. For all of you who want to train your dogs out there, it's all about consistency. But they're not trained for combat. They're trained for, yes, specific needs for if you're a service dog, but if you're a therapy dog, like the Navy is starting to utilize today, they're trained for relieving of stress. So kind of like the animal mascots early on, say with like the Great White Fleet, it's that reminder of home. It's that civilian aspect where you can, if you're having a bad day, you can sit down with the ship's dog and have that happy, goofy face in front of you that you can pet, throw a ball with, and just relax a little bit and de-stress. So yes, kind of the seriousness of the training is still the same, but the jobs are completely different.
Right. So like currently on the Ike, they have Captain Demo. The Gerald Ford has a dog named Sage, and the Wasp has a dog named Ike.
Yeah.
There's also two other dogs I've been able to find, a golden retriever named Oliver and Morgan, a mixed breed, that's at Naval Station Sigonella. What does this bring to sailors?
So this brings, again, like the earlier mascots of the Great White Fleet and World War I and World War II, it brings that sense of home. It brings them a sense of calm. It gives them a chance to de-stress. You know, there's nothing like if you're having a bad day, sitting down with a dog with a goofy look on its face who's just happy to see you, and you get to spend 5 minutes petting it, giving it some treats, maybe throwing a ball and everything as well. To have that moment of thinking about home, that moment of comfort, if you will. And having those dogs on board those ships really help. It's also like the facilities dogs that they have at Walter Reed and everything as well. That's what those dogs are for, to give them that moment of de-stress. Take yourself out of the world for a minute and just spend a time petting a dog. And again, a lot of these programs, be it service dog, be it therapy dogs, a lot of these programs were born out of post-war times because there was a need for these working dogs. There were a need for seeing eye dogs, and more recently, there was a need for PTSD service dogs. So these dogs are filling a gap where technology really can't really help us at this point because it's just not there. And truthfully, I don't ever want it to be there.
In all your studies that you guys have done over this, has there been any good sea stories of animals that you've come across?
Oh, so many to talk about.
I'll let you go
first. Yeah. So the one that I always think about is aboard the Samuel B. Roberts, which was the destroyer escort during World War II, famous for the battle off of Samar or Leyte Gulf. And they had a dockyard mutt that they named Sammy. They gave it. They had the ship's medical office give it a physical, and they had paperwork on it and everything as well. Copeland, who is the CEO, signed off on having this dog on board. They even made it a life jacket, and it had its own battle station that it would go to as well. During the battle, though, sadly, Sammy lost his life. They were abandoning ship, and the dog went into the water with them, but a shell hit nearby, and it scared the dog so much that it went back aboard the Samuel B. Roberts, and sadly, he went down with the ship. But there was a sailor who was grievously wounded in the water who couldn't really swim, and as he was starting to go under, he found Sammy's life jacket that they had made him, and he utilized that to stay alive, to stay afloat until he could be rescued. So, in a way, Sammy gave his life saving a sailor.
Interesting.
Oh, when the battleship Maine, you know, the Remember the Maine, battleship Maine, whose explosion, you know, starts the one of the causes of the Spanish-American War, had three cats on board, and two of them die in the explosion. This is at the same time, the 1890s, is sort of the beginning of what we would call the animal welfare movement. The animal welfare lobbyists latch on to the fact that two cats gave their lives for their country and ask and plead with America, you can take care of your cats. just, you know, nicely and be nice to them, be kind and humane to them. Sailors take care of their cats, are the most magnificent example of taking care of their cats and dogs and other animals. You could do the same. Do as your patriotic duty to be nice to animals.
There's two others that I kind of want to highlight. One of them is a poster, but before we go into that, I would say World War I, the U.S. Navy Railroad gun crews had a Jack Russell Terrier that they named Cognac. That was their mascot. Yeah, they were sailors on shore in France operating these railroad guns, but they made sure to have a dog with them as well. And there's a famous photo. It's all of the officers.
It's a headquarters company.
Yeah, yeah. And Cognac is right there in one of the officers' arms, just sitting there with the gun in the background, just looking like a Jack Russell.
There are a lot of the dogs, especially from World War I, are rescue dogs.
Yeah.
They actually have a backstory of, someone found them in the trenches of France, and we decided to adopt them and now give them a home. So this becomes, they start to latch on to the sort of the public relations aspect of, look, sailors, the animal welfare people especially, sailors who are giving their time, they're putting their lives on the line, love animals. You, as a regular civilian, should be nice to the animals too.
But that poster, I know you can talk about.
Oh, the poster. And I unfortunately can't remember the name of the artist, but it's a very famous one called Because Someone Talked. It's one of the Loose Lips Sink Ships posters.
From World War II.
From World War II. Yeah, and it shows a Springer Spaniel who generally has, Springer Spaniels generally have a kind of a sad look to them. But this one in particular, you see the sailor's jumper on the back of a chair, Springer Spaniel on top of the chair, looking right into your soul. And then you see the gold star flag, indicative of someone, this family just lost somebody, right behind this dog. And I don't have 100% proof, but I am willing to go out on educated guess that the Springer Spaniel was chosen for a reason. That particular breed was cleaning up at the Westminster dog shows and all the professional dog shows. And so everybody knew what a Springer Spaniel looked like. And they would see this poster, and it was not an official, done by the official committee of artists that the department, that the Army and Navy had arranged. This gentleman who created this art just sort of submitted it on his own, and it becomes an instant hit. They can't make enough of them to send around to the country. And it is such a powerful poster. Shut your mouth or this is going to happen.
Just having that sad dog looking into your soul, and the tagline, there's nothing else on it. The tagline is Because Someone Talked.
Yeah.
You
wouldn't want to separate a sailor from his dog, would you? Like, no.
Yeah.
No.
So keep your mouth shut.
Any final thoughts on the topic that you guys want to share?
I would just emphasize this is a serious topic. As much as we tell about sea stories, this is animals in the military is a very serious topic because it does really get to the root of military history being a human experience that we tend to forget in military circles, especially history circles, especially that we're talking about live human beings here. When we start to write about things, we tend to write, especially in the Navy, because we deal with ships, we deal with these big complex machines, but who's behind those machines? There are sailors. There are live human beings who have enlisted and even as officers who are commanding them, operating these very complex machines.
I would say my final thought is look into these stories. Try to find some stories. If there's veterans that you know, ask them if they ran into animals during their wartime service and how they felt about it. Because 9 times out of 10, they're probably going to have a story and they're going to probably gush about how great, said animal was and how memorable it was for them and how it made them think of home and really just tied everything together. So do your research, look at photos, go on our website, history.navy.mil, and there's plenty of information and images on there as well. And, look at those dogs of history.
Well, gentlemen, I thank you for your time today and coming in to talk about this. And to quickly recap on today's episode, more information, stories, and photos about the various animals discussed can be found on our website at history.navy.mil. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Mutts and Men, Animals Who Served, on Anchored in History, Stories of America's Navy.